Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anazal Ministries podcast.
What would you wish for on the Shikon Jewel? We're going to be asking this question and a lot more in today's episode of Systematic Ecology. We are the Priests of the Geeks. I'm your host, Christian Ashley, joined, of course, by the greatest co-host, not named TJ. Pang, how's it going, Pang?
It's going well. How are you doing?
That's a good day. I got that ad recording done for the show. I had the hardest time getting that done. I flubbed it so many times, but it's done. It's going to be out there. You can hear it in all its glory later on. So how are you doing? I know you just got that new job. You're feeling a little better.
I know. I'm recording from my office today, and I'm so sad because I had so much fun. If this goes on YouTube, I had so much fun. Anime posters and trinkets and whatnot, and I'm just in a bare room right now. So, yep, getting ready to start a new job in a couple weeks. Exciting.
Excellent. Oh, yeah. So what have you been geeking out on recently?
Okay, I just started watching it. What am I watching? So, okay, it's not anime, and I kind of hate that. I have been geeking out on anime, but I can't think of it right at this moment. It's called The Heart of Dixie. It's on Prime Video. It's an Alabama romance type deal. Big ER New York doctor goes to a small town. Will she find love? You know she will.
What? Unprecedented.
Yeah. Crazy. Is the guy already engaged right now? Yes.
Oh, love triangle too.
Oh, there's like more like a love pentagon.
Oh,
I know.
I mean, actually kind of apropos for what we're discussing today too.
True.
Okay.
True.
Yeah. Yeah. Me, in preparation for something Joe and I are going to be doing on Friday Night Frights, I have just started the Hellier series, which is basically taking the story of the Hopkinsville goblins that was a reported UFO alien sighting in the 50s and then seeing if they were maybe still around today. And it's been fun so far. Definitely some out there takes, but you know what? I'm used to that being in the paranormal world. So moving on from there, if you haven't figured out by the intro question, we're discussing Inuyasha. Now, Pang, I know this is an anime that's very near and dear to your heart. So why don't you go ahead and tell the good people what Inuyasha is and what it's about?
Yeah, so Inuyasha, gosh, I should have Googled when it came out. This was actually, I would classify as my first anime, 2000. I was 8. Yay.
Fins. I think it was 2003.
2003. So I was 12, which makes even more sense. So this was my first, I would say, like, actual anime. So it wasn't Digimon. It wasn't Pokemon. You know what I mean? Like, technically, the debate of when you first started watching anime. But this was, like, I would say, my first anime that can't be confused as a Saturday morning cartoon. Because it came on Adult Swim at, like, 11 o'clock at night. And I had to stay up for it. I would actually record it as well with a VHS. I know. I just dated myself. So pretty much the backstory of Inuyasha is this is in the feudal era of Japan. So a modern day Tokyo girl called Kagome, who is the granddaughter of the shrine attendant, she falls into a well and gets plunged back in time, where she meets this half demon Inuyasha, and we pretty much learn what the Shikon Jewel is, which is a very powerful jewel that you can do almost anything with. And it breaks, and the whole show is them trying to find the remnants of the Shikon Jewel to put back together. And there's a lot of drama. There's a lot of fighting. There is a love triangle, and there is someone who I lovingly refer to. Her name is Kiki Yo, but we will all call her Kiki Ho, okay? That is her name. So, yes.
Spoilers for a question I'm to ask later on. Interesting.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I'm already jumping ahead. But that's pretty much it.
Oh, yes. And you were right, by the way. It was 2000. I think maybe 2003 or 4 is when it started airing on Adult Swim. I got the date wrong. But the point is, you were right about the anime. It actually started manga-wise in 96.
Wow, I did not know that. I forget there's manga involved sometimes.
Yes. And this is by a very prolific manga artist, one of the greatest mangaka of all time in some people's lists. And I'd definitely put her up there. Rumiko Takahashi, and she's done a ton of series, many of which have gotten anime adaptations. We've got Urusei Yatsura, Meison Ikkoku, Ranma One Half, Rene, and of course, Inuyasha. There's plenty more that she's done. This woman has devoted her life to creating manga, and for the most part, I'm on her side. She's done a really good job on a lot of stuff, but this is more like her middle work around the way. And like Panga said, it's taking place in the feudal world of Japan. That's anywhere from like the 1470s to like, I want to say the 1630s. And this would be around the mid 1500s, if I remember correctly, specifically. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to date exactly when this happens because not really too many historical figures are mentioned as far as like placing when this would happen. But yeah, we have a girl, Kagome, like you said, who is modern girl. Flung into the past, she's works as a Miko at her ancestral shrine, and is this thing that connects her to the past, you know, this well that brings her there, and she meets Inuyasha. They have a very bickering relationship that's a Takahashi feature. If you have to have a main couple, they're going to be tsundere for each other, and it just kind of happens across all of her works that way. This is a really fun show. It's not my favorite by any stretch of the imagination, but I do enjoy watching it. And like you, my introduction was Adult Swim, and I did not record it. Invincible teenager that I was, I would wait until it aired, which was like 5 or 6 in the morning, knowing I had to get up at 9 o'clock to go to church on Sunday. And let's just say there were many Sundays where I was quite irritable for some reason, because maybe 2.5-3 hours of sleep. So yeah, it's a fun show. It was worth getting up and watching. Like, I don't think it was a waste of time. It wasn't the most responsible use of my time, mind you, but it was fun.
Sounds like it. I mean, I had a good time. I always say Inuyasha was my first anime love, and that's a big deal to me.
Yeah. I mean, how important would you say he is to you?
I have him tattooed on my body. Yeah. So I would say pretty dang important.
Yep. So, do you have a favorite character in the show?
Favorite character? You know, I'm going to contradict myself.
Oh boy.
But there's a wolf demon called Koga, and I do like him. I like what he stirs up. You know what I mean? He stirs up Inuyasha's jealousy. So I would say Koga.
Yeah, he's an interesting one because, you know, starting off, she makes him look like more of a villain, and then he becomes more heroic after time. You kind of wait, didn't you murder like a bunch of people to start? But don't worry about it, because he's going after Kagome now. He's one of the good guys. But yeah, he does bring out that bit of jealousy from Inuyasha. And, you know, there's a little bit of flirtation with Kagome too, that she kind of reciprocates, because at least he's being forward about it compared to someone else. So yeah, he's fun. Now me, my favorite character is Sango. I loved her introduction in the show as born in a group of demon slayers, which, you know, given that yokai are around here, yokai, of course, being what we would typically call, you know, okay, it's very big difference in linguistics here. It's English typically just says demon when talking about yokai because it's the closest appropriate term, but really a better term would be like the fair folk or something like that, or fae or fairy. And they're just different entities. They'd all have these special abilities, and they're very spiritual, supernatural beings, but they're not like demons as we would look at in like scripture. So she is fighting against bad yokai and this group, and her family all gets massacred, of course, except for her brother. And there's a whole thing of him surviving that causes grief along the way. But I loved how strong-willed she is. I love the boomerang, and I love Killala. I'm not a dog or cat person, but I don't like getting up against fur, but there's something about that cat that goes, okay, I'll make an exception for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I do like Kealala a lot. And then I'm surprised. I want to say Shippo, but like Shippo was just kind of too annoying. But he was kind of Kagome's kid in a way. They rescued him.
He's just a bratty kid character, sidekick.
But he is cute.
Oh, yeah. There's a cuteness to him. There's also that annoying part where he just automatically takes Kagome's side no matter what.
I think that's why I like bratty. Him, because I would want him to take my side no matter what.
Yeah, he's fine. Well, how about least favorite, Pang?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Kikiho. Why did I even think?
What is it about her that you would say you're not big on?
Well, number one, she needs to just stay dead. Stay dead, Kikiho. No one wants you here.
Yeah.
Does it? No, because, I mean, I get it. She was brought back to life against her own will. And yes, she has some bitterness and hatred and blah, 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 blah. But then when she finds out the whole truth, like, she's just being a hoe. Stop it. Like, you had an excuse your first, like, few episodes, but now you're just awful.
All right. So, time travel shenanigans. In the current era where Kagome is at, it's 50 years after the events where Inuyasha and Kikyo were kind of involved with one another, and it's the breaking of the Shikon Jewel there that has caused a rift between them. He wanted it to, like, because he's half yokai, half human, and he wanted to become, like, full yokai, and he was going to wish on what the jewel does. If you wish on it, you get your wish, and we'll find along the way how it gets corrupted. And she was the protector of it. So originally he was just a scoundrel going after it, but then he kind of fell for her. But our main villain, Naraku, created animosity between them to the point where there's kind of a mutual kill between them. And Kagome is the reincarnation of Kikyo. And that's why she's connected as well and has spiritual abilities. So Kikyo is brought back to life by Naraku to sow more discord as the Shikon Jewel has been broken. And yeah, she is not the best handled character, shall we say. So I'm with you there. And I'm also with you, like, stay away from Inuyasha. You had your chance and you blew it. Yeah, he's with Kagome now. So yeah, that's a good one. I'm actually going to go for mine with Moroku.
I don't love the people who love love.
No. It's not that I don't love people who love love. I hate people who aggressively grab other women and molest them and grope them, and it's played for comedy, which is also a Takahashi special.
He has a cursed hand.
Okay.
To caress people's bottoms.
Yes.
I just like defending people because it makes you guys aggravated.
I know. But there's aspects of him I do love. And the idea, like, his family line was cursed by Naraku to have this, you know, wind tunnel is what it's translated to in English. And it's kind of their special, like, Buddhist wrappings around it to prevent it from always being active. But if it's let loose, it sucks anything into it. So it's one of the most OP abilities in there. And of course, that's when the insects get involved that nerf him in every other fight that happens in the rest of the series. But the idea is, like, it will eventually consume him from the inside out. And so he is obsessed with, you know, fathering a son who will then carry the legacy when he dies so that they can get revenge on Naraku. So that's a cool part of that. But then he goes too far and starts molesting and groping women. And Sango is the main target of his affections. And yes, I do like them together eventually, but there's a part of me that goes, this double standard here is not a lot of fun. I hate him. I hate that aspect of him.
Makes sense.
All right. So I have a favorite arc in the show.
Favorite arc. I don't know. I like them all. I mean, it was only, I guess I would say Inuyasha in the movie 2 through the Looking Glass. So not really an arc. Mm-hmm. But I know. I just like went a little nerd. Out, but that was when they kissed for the first time. So
something that I'm pretty sure never actually happened in the manga proper. Now we know, of course, with the sequel series that they do, you know, spoilers, by the way, get together and have a daughter. So we know it has to have happened, but like being shown on screen, you know, a kiss between the two. Yeah. That's what the shippers, we'll take what we can get.
This is true. Yeah. I didn't know it didn't happen in the manga. Interesting.
I'm fairly certain it doesn't at all. And that's one thing about this is that there are huge differences sometimes between the manga and anime, because this was being produced at the time when you didn't stop. You just kept going. you know, like, you know, One Piece is pretty much the only survivor of this era as far as anime is concerned, where if you catch up to the manga, you start doing filler arcs or filler episodes. And this was a huge, what's the word I'm looking for here, a bane to this series, because the filler is not that great. And so it's got some people go, well, this happened here, but well, it didn't actually happen because it's filler. But as far as answering the question, favorite arc, I love when, because it's part of the series here, is Inuyasha has an older full yokai brother named Sesshomaru. And there's always been some rivalry between them. We'll get to that later on. And Sesshomaru has wanted to covets the sword that Inuyasha has because he thinks it's rightfully his. But there's another sword he finds that his dad made for him. And it actually heals people. And this is a huge blow to him. And I love the way that it makes him grow a little bit, as well as into him taking care of Rin and showing a little more compassion to her. So I don't know exactly what the arc is called, but like him learning more about who his dad was and what his dad prioritized, and then becoming a little better of a character himself, better of a person. I really appreciate that.
Makes sense. So Inuyasha's sword is called the Tensaiga, which can slay 1,000 demons at a time. And then Sesshomaru's sword is called the Tensaiga, which can heal 100 people at a time. So pretty much as long as they're like freshly dead, he can see like pretty much the grim little Reaper gremlins and like slice them. And then the people like would come back to life. Just fun fact, listeners. And Sesshomaru is very attractive, in case you guys want to know.
I didn't have to hear you say that to know that was your opinion, because it was the opinion of many an anime fangirl back in the day that he was number one.
Yes. I mean, like, he is more attractive than Inuyasha, but like I said, Inuyasha was my first love.
Yes, yes. All right. So, as mentioned, Inuyasha does kind of have an arc around the idea that he himself is born of a yokai demon father and a human woman, and he has the half demon, half human heritage. So how is this portrayed in the Shoupang, and how does he grow throughout the series based on this idea as a premise? Because he wants to be full yokai.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's your classic, I'm halfway into each world, so I actually belong nowhere. And so a lot of, you know, animes or shows have like shown this before, whether it's through race or through discrimination. So humans hated him, demons hated him. So he literally says in one aspect is, I had to make my own way into the path. He had a human mother who loved him, and that was taken from him at a young age. So he's only known very little love in his life. So it was shown well, kind of just how people treated him. And so you saw, you know, all the demons like mock him, saying, what are you, a half demon? Or I can't believe I was defeated by a half demon. And of course, humans are, we all suck and we are narrow-minded. So humans couldn't see past their own nose that Inuyasha was a kind half-demon, because once again, there's nothing like that in the world. They run across one other half-demon and he was like really ugly, but the sweetest guy ever. And the villagers hated him. But you can also see through his journey, people are starting to come around like, oh, there are good humans. There are good demons. Stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a classic example of, you know, being a child of two different worlds, worlds that are constantly in conflict with each other. And yeah, looking into the idea of assuming that yokai were real, imagine creating a society where you don't have their abilities, you don't have their toughness, but what humans do have are numbers and technology. Even the technology at the time would be enough for them to not fight on equal footing, but enough to like be able to establish what Japan was at that time, is what they're positing. So, yeah, that struggle we see in him, because that's a huge part of his motivation, is to get the jewel and become full yokai. But there's also the human part of him that does legitimately fall for Kikyo at the beginning, and then will eventually fall for Kakome later on, that doesn't want to give up the human part of him. And it even gets into, well, it's not like yokai are unable to love, because of course his father did fall in love with a woman to, you know, make him in the first place. So I think it does a good job to show that not all yokai are just evil because they're yokai, and not all humans are great because they're human. And he sees both worlds. And he, like you said, he's gotten the worst from both worlds. But I think it actually helps him at the end of the day to empathize with others, even though he's not the best at it because he's a very rough, aggressive kind of guy. But he can actually see things that others wouldn't. And one thing I do really appreciate, too, is, you know, kind of an anti-werewolf situation. And I think it's, is it the full moon or the new moon where he becomes, he becomes full human one day out of every month. And there's some really good stories told around that, because obviously he doesn't have the same abilities because he's human now. And it forces him to confront this and to show his weakness in front of Kagome, because it's shameful to him that he becomes full human here. He doesn't want to admit that that's possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do like it when he became when he becomes human. I might have written a fan fiction or two back in the day of how he was incorporated into Kagome's life and how he went to, like, you know, during those new moons nights. This was back in when fan fiction was peak. I wish fan fiction was peak again.
Yeah, I don't know. It's been a while since I've been into the fandom there, watching what and reading what people are doing. But yeah, it does feel like it's not as prevalent as it was in the 2000s.
I feel like it's because you can now stream anime so easy. You don't wonder what if, but you don't think through the anime anymore. You just jump on to the next one. Hmm. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder what the real reason is, because I know people are still writing it. I mean, because I see it every now and then, but it's just not the same.
They do. I still read fan fiction, but my favorite animes, now that they are older, they're not getting updated anymore.
Yeah.
Because people are moving on.
That's to be expected. Mm-hmm. Whatever the new hotness is, they'd be going after that instead. Okay. But now that we're off track, let's get back on track. So our main villain for this series, for better or worse, is a guy known as Naraku. Peng, would you like to explain who Naraku is and how effective do you think that he is as a villain, in your opinion?
Yeah, Naraku, I appreciate because, I mean, very rarely does a villain stay the whole entirety of the show, right? Like, usually it's like, oh, we defeated this person, and now we're chilling, and now a new person comes up, and now we're chilling, and now a new person comes up. Or, like, there's, like, small little villains with, you know what I mean? If that makes sense. But Naraku was, like, there the whole time because he was very elusive, very smart. And so I think he was a great villain. He got foiled in, like, small battles. But, like, at the end, it seemed like he was always one step ahead in the war, at least. Until, of course, like, being the villain, he was eventually taken care of. But it was great. And even he had a really great backstory. Because should I say the spoiler?
Go for it. Yeah.
We discovered that he was Halfman too. And so that's why he's also seeking the big power of the Shikon Jewel.
Shikon Jewel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we find out that Naraku, he was also in love with Kikiho. Don't forget to say her name correctly. He was also in love with Kikiho, but he was like a human on the brink of death. And so he wanted to be with her so bad, and he wanted power. He let demons consume his body. And through that, he ended up becoming a half demon, like half human, half demon, not in the sense that he was born, but like a Franken monster being created. So his whole thing was like trying to absorb powerful demons, you know, getting them to do his bidding. And yeah, it was very, very interesting.
Yeah, because they play this to where, you know, the human side, the demon side are in conflict. But at the same time, he falls pretty much in lust with Kikiyo, and it's not returned. I have problems with calling women hoes. Sorry.
Okay, fine, whatever.
But you can continue to do so and be a terrible woman. Just.
I will. Absolutely.
But that rejection causes him to grow bitter and make pacts with demons and allow them to mess with his flesh. And to the point where he grows in power, seeks after the Shikon Jewel to obtain the ultimate power that he wants and lusts after. And it also creates a person who shows up too many times in the show. As far as, oh, you've stopped me, but you haven't really stopped me because I've got something else. And it gets annoying after a while. And I just happen to think about this, contrast him with the villain who kind of in similar ways does the same thing. And that's like a Xanatos from Gargoyles. I don't know if you've watched the show or not. But his whole thing is the Xanatos Gambit. It's like, yeah, you beat me, but I also had this larger plan out there. But there was something about him that's just more conniving and better than Naraku. Naraku is just like smug in the wrong way. And Xanatos was smug in the right way. I don't really know I'd have to actually think that through because I just literally thought about it. But he just comes across as a person, nah, it doesn't matter what you do. I have this other plan. And it gets annoying. Every villain is connected to him in some way, shape, or form. That there's no one out there. I mean, I don't say there's no one out there, but for the most part, if anyone comes up against a group, it's because he sent them that way. And then he creates different like incarnations of himself, the baby and Kagura and all that other mess. And there's interesting things that happen as a result of that, but he overstays his welcome with me. Mm. And it is very satisfying when we eventually get to his end. And what is the wish Kugami makes? Just that he never existed or something like that, making a pure wish on the Shikon Jewel. Because it means that everything he built up for was for nothing, and he is nothing. And I was like, okay, I'm satisfied with that ending, but I would have felt better if, I don't know. It's another staple of Takahashi's writing, and she keeps going.
And so she wished for the Shikon Jewel to disappear forever.
Okay, yeah. Which was one of the things we'll talk about wishes in a bit, and what this show kind of says on that. But the idea being making a pure wish instead of a selfish one. And that's something he himself could never do because he's an inherently selfish person. And he's effective at his job, but it grates on me after a while.
That makes sense. I hated Kagura.
Because she was trying to get with Sesshomaru. You're going to have anyone else going after
her? She was just annoying. And so, I mean, some people count Sesshomaru as a villain, but he was just a annoyed brother wanting the inheritance. It was more about inheritance. It was more about inheritance for him, not because he actually hated Inuyasha. He just
wanted it was
score.
A personal family grudge. All right. So, as previously discussed, a major part of the show is the love triangle between Kagome, Inuyasha, and Kikyo. So, Peng, I don't know how anyone could ever think that they would know how you would answer this, but I want to hear what your thoughts are on this and how it's done in the show.
I mean, it was a valid love triangle because Inuyasha didn't want to admit his feelings for anyone. I mean, they showed the backstory of how he ended up falling in love with Kikiho, and Kikiho fell in love with him, and they were tricked by Naraku, thinking they betrayed each other, right? And so they were mad, but then they understood it was all a trick, and so Inuyasha just, couldn't let go of his feelings, and Kikiho was a manipulator and a homewrecker and blah, blah, blah. But what Inuyasha didn't understand, even though he realized his feelings for Kikiho, he didn't realize his feelings for Kagome quite yet anyway. And then once he did, Kagome has the complex because she is technically Kikiho's reincarnation 2.0, better. That's why Kikiho needs to stay dead. But her and Inuyasha, Kagome and Inuyasha are both too stubborn to really talk about their feelings or to acknowledge it. So yeah, it was done well. It wasn't until Kagome couldn't go be with him that they realized how much they loved each other and stuff.
So I just want to get this straight. So in Elizabeth Pangalang and Clyde's mind, a homewrecker is worse than a serial molester. I just want that put that on there on the record.
Yes. Because she was manipulative and vindictive. Maroku just had a curved hand and liked to tell women how great their bottoms were through physical touch.
I'm sure every guy else there wants to have that cursed hand and get away with it.
Yeah. What's it called?
But yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Say that as parole hearing. It is what it is, judge. Anyways, that's what you've said. Yeah, I'm with you. It serves its purpose. And it goes on for far too long because people can't commit. And that's a staple of the time it was written. Romances, even written by women, weren't really brought to the point of resolution because there was always that big fear that if they ever actually got together, it would kill the chemistry somehow, which I think is more a self-report on how bad your writing would be after that than it is with anything. So, and shonen manga, as far as written by men, were way worse. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, it's fine. You had feelings from his time before, 50 years ago. Then you have Kagome here, and they're two different personalities between, you know, Kikyo and her reincarnation in Kagome. But there's enough of a difference for it to be fun at the start. But it really grates on me after times, like, just commit. Just say something to end this madness. And it eventually does happen. But once again, this is a series that went on for hundreds of chapters. So it takes its sweet time to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, kind of going along with that, common criticism thrown against the show is its portrayal of its female characters. Like, what are your thoughts on this? You know, especially since this is written and drawn by a female mangaka.
So how I feel about the female characters?
Like, they say, like, Kagome, for instance, she's far too hot-headed for her own good. She punishes Inuyasha for everything that he does. Not everything, but you know what I mean. And you know, Sango not being strong enough to stand up to Moroku and his advances. And I'm sure there's others I'm forgetting about off the top of my head. But what do you think?
All right, well, number one, Sango actually liked Moroku and enjoyed it, and she would beat him, so she did stand up. Just saying. I just like to defend the people. But I thought Moroku was funny. He made me laugh. But also, I think also I can defend Moroku, and we've joked about Sanji, because I'm like, this is just cartoons. Like, we will teach our kids not to touch women in real life. Like, right?
There's a difference between fictional and real.
Correct. But I feel like it was done well, because there are hot-headed women. Like, we're not the type to just, like, blush and take it. Kagome was very aggravated with Inuyasha, and Inuyasha was a jerk, so it's good that she was hot-headed. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You needed it for Inuyasha. But, I think it was done well. I appreciate there was no overly done, and it could be because it was drawn by a woman, but some women, you know, they make the best hentai as well, if you think about it. There was no, not that I know, I'm just saying, like, women can do anything. Truly, I don't. Now it sounds like I'm lying, but I don't care. But there wasn't, like, overly...
You can do anything, you said, talking about hentai. Oh, no.
Whatever. But I'm just saying, like, just because a woman drew it doesn't mean they can't draw, like, provocative things. But, like, with this drawing, because it was in the 2000s, there wasn't a lot of provocative scenes, which I appreciated. I mean, you did have their bath scenes every once in a while, so you saw the curbs and, like, them covering themselves with a towel. But I feel like it was done very tasteful, where a man might have made the demons a little bit more sexual and, you know, mm-hmm. alluring versus the way she drew them.
Yeah, there's definitely some fan service in a series, but for the most part, it's pretty tasteful. Mm-hmm. And I think that does help being written and drawn by a woman. But dang it, Pang. I had something else I was going to say. Yeah, I think to an extent, I agree with some of the criticism, not 100%, because I think they're way better characters than that. Like, Kagome does grate my nerves every now and then, that she'll just use the sit boy command on Inuyasha at, like, the flip of a hat, rather than he's actually earned it. And yeah, there are times he's absolutely earned it because he's a huge jerk, especially at the mm-hmm. start of the series. And yeah,
I mean,
fine.
He did try to kill her when they first met, in her defense.
Yes. But then it becomes a running gag, to the point, like, anything that he does that could be misconstrued in any way possible, she just uses the command, even if he's done nothing wrong. And I think that plays into the unfair sex trope, and that it's okay if a woman does it, because the man deserves to be punished regardless. So that grates me a little bit, but I don't think it's, like, breaking for the series to have it at all. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make me hate Kagome in any way. And Sango, of course, needs to stand up for herself. And yeah, she does fall for Moroku, like, legitimately. And he falls for her legitimately. But there's some conversations that needed to be had before that don't really get addressed outside of, well, I like it. And there's some unfortunate implications from something like that, of ending up with an abuser. And yes, Moroku's not portrayed in the way that other real life abusers would be. Let me get that straight. But it does. But what kind of message are we sending to the girls reading this that they need from their man? No, please. But at the end of the day, like, they get along really well with each other. Like, there's some friction every now and then. You know, you travel with someone for so long, of course it's going to happen. But it's no, like, oh, you're going after him. Yeah, none of this bratty teenage girl kind of fighting between them that would, like, be done for the sake of this is what women do. They just fight with each other because women hate women. No, they actually, they're friends. They get along. It's fine. Like Kikyo is probably a worse offender in many regards of she's become too revenge driven to actually see straight. But I think that has less to do with her being a woman and more like what happened to her and her character. So, yeah. All right.
Good point. Good point.
So we brought up Susanoo earlier in his rivalry with Inuyasha. So how do you feel about the rivalry we get between the two of them and how does it end up ultimately?
I like it because, I mean, at the end of the day, he actually like trains Inuyasha in some ways and like helps him like with a few breakthroughs. So you wonder if like Susanoo is really all bad or if he's just like an annoyed older brother because the younger one got what he wanted, but he also, you know, he helps him out a little bit. I can't remember exactly how they ended. I know they ended on fine terms. They didn't like become brotherly loves, but when he, as you mentioned before, when he started like doting on a human girl, he kind of softened a little bit because he could see that not all humans are pathetic. So it was a good character change for him too.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And it's the contrast between the two is like when you look at them like objectively, Sesshomaru is obviously more competent and talented than Inuyasha. He's a little more feral and kind of just gets things done by the seat of his pants at times. And I say he never plans for anything, but like there's one who's calm and collected. The other's just a bit more impetuous and rude and abrasive. And the contrast between them is really fun. And as they grow across the series, seeing them gaining appreciation for each other, like outright saying, you know, I love you, brother, because that they're just a product of their time. And they're not going to admit that feeling out loud, but they do eventually gain a respect and love and affection for each other. And it connects them to their dad, who at this point in the series has died, if I remember correctly. And, you know, the father that they never really knew, the father that they thought they knew. That's a lot of fun. And of course, the two swords being used between them to compare and contrast one another. That's a ton of fun. And ultimately, it ends really well in that Sesshomaru gives up a lot of his pride, knowing that this isn't his story. This is his brother's story. So he aids and abets him rather than making it all about himself, which is what he would have done at the beginning of the series.
Mm-hmm. And he's hot. Right.
And yeah, he is drawn rather handsomely. Yes.
Really is. I do love looking at him.
He was a common number one around the anime fandom of that time. I remember seeing a lot of those.
He was peak husbando during that time. He was, listeners, if you haven't seen this in Inuyasha, he was pretty much the Gojo of the 2000s.
Ooh.
You're welcome.
That's one okay. You know what? That's pretty up. Yeah.
Pretty so accurate.
We kind of brought up a little bit earlier, but to continue on with the idea of that. The idea of wishes itself being inherently selfish is a bit of a constant theme in the show. Does this idea work for you and how does this get shown?
Yes, yes, yes. But even when you wish, it's because it's something that you want. So are you being selfish in a non-selfish way? Like, I want world peace, but what is that going to do for the economy? You can't just give everything away. I'm just kidding. I mean, yeah. No. But I mean, I feel... to have a selfless wish is kind of almost impossible. Like if I wish for like the blessings of my family members, yes, that's selfless, but also it's a little selfish on my part because I don't want to take care of them when they get old. So of course I want them to be blessed now.
And of course you gave the wish to people you know.
Correct. Like I don't think I would waste a wish like help these people I don't know at all. You know, that's just not your go-to. So... but even in the show, Kagome wished for the Seikon jewel to have never been, you know, made. And so because of that, all those souls, but like, so all those souls in the jewel was released. And so he lost a lot of his power. But I'm like, for it to never exist, it got created for a purpose. So now you're like taking away, you know, a power. Like you could have like healed the sick. You could have done this. You could have done that, you know. So was it not existing at all, does that really just benefit you? Because now you don't have the headache of hunting for the Seikon jewel when you could have benefited world peace or like sickness or something. I don't know. I don't think a selfless, I think there's always going to be a cause and effect with whatever you do. And there could potentially be selfish and negative thing with everything.
Yeah. Well, we could start with our main character, Inuyasha. His wish is to become full yokai. And there's something about that saying, I hate what I look like. I hate who I am. And rather than loving what has been given to you, how you've been created, you decide to make that all about who you are. And to the point where you reject yourself. And that rejection is selfish because you're looking at flaws only you can see versus the beauty that is actually there. And being that child of two worlds, I'm sure there's plenty of people out there born from mixed racial relationships who feel that way, but that's patently untrue, that they're unworthy, that they're not as beautiful as everyone else, that there's somehow some kind of mutt who doesn't deserve anything. They should just be one or the other. It's like, no, you're a product of that union. And he eventually comes to the point where he gives up that wish because he's learned to accept those parts of who he is. And of course, Naraku, one of his wishes was for Kikyo to love him back. And that is inherently selfish because she has already said no. So you're creating a reality where you're overriding the will of someone else. And that's one of the worst crimes I can think of, is forcing someone to act in a way that they wouldn't. And it takes Kagome figuring out that everyone who's ever tried to use this stupid thing has always had it turned against them because it has become corrupted over time from being infested, I think, with some yokai and bad wishes and stuff like that. It's been a while since I've read and watched through this, so I can't remember everything. But she realizes, oh, well, the only way to truly get rid of this thing is to make a selfless wish, one that benefits everyone. And it's best for it not to be there, for Naraku to be gone. So I think there's something poignant to be said there. It's like, what would you wish for? Is it just for self? Is that inherently a selfish thing to do? Or is there some way, better way of doing it?
I would wish for myself to be a billionaire. And I would do a lot of money with that money for nonprofits and the church and missions and stuff like that. But I would also do a lot of good for myself. So 100% selfish.
I've previously mentioned my wishes as well, but they're behind paid content. So if you want to hear that,
you can go that way. Was that our bonus question that I didn't read ahead and I gave my own bonus?
No.
Okay, good.
I would have said something before you did anything. You get all scot-free this time for not preparing.
Yeah, you're right. But I would say I could choose another wish. I'll say something even more off-pocket than I already have in the bonus content.
You don't know how selfish I am. I have so many selfish wishes to make.
Dude, I will talk about an illegal thing I would do if I got a wish in the bonus content.
Wow.
I would. You're welcome. All right. But that's later.
So our final main question before we go to our bonus question that we'll introduce to the audience, is the show and the manga too long for its own good, as some critics have said?
I don't think so. I feel like people who think things are too long just have issues with commitment. That's all. Now, if we're talking about the sequel to Inuyasha, I feel like we would have been fine without it, but that's a whole nother story.
Not a Yashahime fan?
I just had to wait until it was finished airing so I can binge it, because it wasn't worth waiting the week to week. I think it is finished now.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, but even then it didn't go all the way up to the manga, but another story.
Yeah. In the original run of the anime, there were, I think, 167 episodes, which...
That's nothing.
And a very rare thing, it actually got canceled, which normally that doesn't happen for an anime that continues to run as long as it did. But part of that was that people were just getting upset with the filler that was being introduced there, and nothing seemed to be progressing at all. And I think it was a victim of the filler versus everything. So a lot of people, their introduction to it is the anime. And when you have 160 some episodes and not a lot of things are proceeding because you don't want to get caught up to the manga as you're writing and you need the right filler episodes. Yeah, of course you're going to feel that way. But having actually read the manga post that, well, the same criticisms are being thrown against that. And eventually it would get a sequel to its original run in the final act that would condense a lot of things into like 24 or so episodes. Maybe it's more than that. I have to look it up again. So you got an ending in the anime, but it was a lot faster than how the manga proceeded. So, yeah, I think at the same time, I don't think Takahashi had a plan for everything that she was going to do. And it's very self-evident in how things just kind of happen. And then she moves on to the next thing and things happen and she moves on to the next thing. So that can get very grating, especially if you're putting all your time and effort into reading this or watching it. Yeah, I get it. But so, like I said, I think it's a victim of the filler episodes making people think that it would actually happen. And it's also a guilt of the author herself that she kept going because, hey, this was making money. So I can't really fault her for that. So on the manga side of things, but I prefer my stories to know exactly where they're going to go. Or if you don't know that, to at least be entertaining the entire time along the way. And this was not always the best at that, but it's still a fun show. It's still worthy of your attention. All right. Do you have anything else you'd like to discuss before we wrap things up?
Nope. I think it's a great show. And so if you haven't watched it, you might not like it because of all the new and so much faster paced anime out there. But just know this is one of the pillars of anime, in my humble opinion, my humble correct opinion. It's a pillar.
Well, why don't you go ahead and rate it for me out of 10?
See, that's hard because I'm biased since it was my first anime. I'm going to give it a 9, even if it doesn't deserve a 9.
Well, you know, it's your ranking. You can do whatever you want.
It is my ranking. Yes. I mean, there's other animes out there that I would rewatch again right now. And I can't say I would rewatch this now. But back in the day, I rewatched it like a lot.
Oh, yeah. Well, it reran a lot on Adult Swim. Yeah, at those sure ungodly did. Hours. But you know what? It was still entertaining and fun. Yeah, it's not the deepest series in the world. It's not my favorite by any stretch of the imagination. It's not going to be anywhere near my top 100, but it's a 7 out of 10. It's fine. It's inoffensive for the most part. There's some interesting story beats that are brought up here in the relationship between yokai and human, you know, inter-sibling rivalry, inter-party rivalry, and grudges. It's fun. You can't go wrong with, you know, skipping the filler and watching that. And I'm sure there's a website out there that would tell you, here's the episode you need to watch, or just read the manga. It'd go a lot faster. So Fang, we are going to be doing a bonus question today, and it's not what you thought it was.
We're going to ask a question. Good. I don't have to talk about being illegal then.
Who would we have liked to see get more focus on as a character?
Oh, I guess.
So I'd be thinking about that before we head that way. So guys, actually before that, recommendations you have for the audience.
Recommendation. I started watching The Wallflower, A Wallflower Blooms with Dignity on Netflix. I can't think of the actual like English name, but I read the manga. It was fantastic, and it now has an anime. So you should go watch that. Some romance, fluffy fluff.
Okay. So when I moved from seminary, one of the boxes I had of my books just disappeared. We have no clue where it ended up at. And as a result, I lost all of my Halo books. But I was going through a thrift store the other day, and I found them all for like 50 cents a piece. So I'm going to recommend the Halo novels because there's a lot of good stuff written there that you just don't find in the games. So guys, thank you for all that you do. Please get a chance to give a 5-star review in your podcasting platform of choice to help us ratings there, to help us find more people. Go ahead and suggest more episode topic ideas for us that you really want us to cover. And you can send questions and concerns to us at systematicgeekology@gmail.com. I'd like to shout out some supporters real quick. And of course, if you want to hear your own name being shouted out, you can join us for $3 a month, and we'll say your name too. So Ethan Overcash, Austin Nance, Amber Riley, and Jonathan Augustine, you guys are the best. But remember, we are all the chosen people, a geekdom of priests.
Thank you all so much for your time listening to this episode. If you want to help sponsor our show, but you can't quite do the membership thing, commit to that once a month payment, good news, you can leave a donation on our Fourth Wall website. You also can get some free content over there. So if you don't have the money for the membership, but you still want to hear some of the extras and bonuses we do over on Fourth Wall, there's an option for that. If you want to support the show without that commitment every month, again, you can donate over there. Every little bit helps. You know, our show has a lot of needs when it comes to equipment, when it comes to going to some of the events we want to go to, advertising, getting the word out about our show. It takes a lot, and we really appreciate each and every person who's able to help us do it, even if it's something free, just like the free membership or leaving a rate and review on our site. Every little bit helps. Your time listening to this helps, and we appreciate all of you. We're so proud of the community we formed over at Systematic Ecology, and we're very happy and we're proud that you're a part of it. Thank you so much for your time and for being a part of this community.
Hello, Systematic Geekology listeners. This is Kevin here. Just want to give a brief ad for some of the other podcasts in our Anazal podcast network. First of all, off is Let Nothing Move You by Christian Ashley, in which Christian goes through the Bible one chapter at a time and gives his thoughts there. There is also the Bible After Hours, which is a more progressive take on the Bible that tries to challenge the status quo with satire and looks at theology. The host uses the pseudonym, the Foulmouth Preacher. And as a bonus, Joshua Knoll does the voices for this one. So definitely check that one out. And also, And We'll Laugh About That Later is the newest podcast that our own Will Rose is starting, where he will interview friends about a story they had that wasn't funny at the time, but that they laugh about now. So definitely check out these shows and subscribe to us wherever you get your pods. Thank you very much.